Okay, this is sound roll number 54 for Fight in the Fields, a Paradigm production. We have a minus 8 dB reference tone to follow on the module ladder, which equals 0 VU. Okay, we're now going to be starting the interview with Bill Grammy. We'll be on camera roll 113, I believe, 113, and we'll be starting with take number one.
Understand it without all the complex detail, but you give me the analysis again of why the Teamsters were thinking to move into the fields in terms of organizing farm workers and how that was sort of moving towards an inevitable confrontation.
Yes, the Teamsters represented in the from the 40s on through to the present day all of the frozen food, all of the canneries, the majority of the packing sheds. In food processing, as well as the drivers from field to shed, from field to canneries and frozen food plants. So they represented in excess of 100,000 people in California, for example, that were involved in the food processing industry, all the way from canneries, frozen food plants, dehydrators, fresh fruit and food packing sheds, as well as the vacuum coolers for lettuce and the like. So consequently, when two events occurred almost simultaneously, some of the processes began moving into the fields. Some of the processes, for example, I'll give you an example of tomatoes. Tomatoes formerly came into the plant and then were processed, either whether it was a packing shed or whether it was a cannery. They were first graded by a group of women in those plants, and then they went on to the variety of processing or fresh vegetables as they may. Many other products were handled in a similar fashion. At some point during the 60s primarily, the tomato machines, for example, came into play, whereas the women that formerly did the grading were moved into the field on these tomato machines, and the tomato machine did the picking. It pulled the vine and tomato into the machine, separated the vine from the tomato, and then the women did the grading on this piece of machinery that moved through the fields. That work was lost then to the packing shed and the cannery that had formerly been done there. That happened in a variety of cases, in a variety of products, but that is the clearest example I can give of that happening. Also, because many of the, most of the product that came into plants had to be most of it, I'd say about 60% was usable. The other 60% was going to be discarded and carried back into the fields where it came from. Many of the processes that would do that left the plants and left the packing sheds and were done in the field, so that much of this processing was done in the field itself. So
you mentioned there were two factors. There was something else going on.
Yeah. At the same time that this movement toward the field was occurring, where we had members, then Chavez started organizing in the field. The Teamsters had done some organizing in the field, primarily in the Antel case, where they had moved from the trucking operation and had extensively organized that throughout California and into Arizona, and extended that to the field operations and the farm workers of Bud Antel. But primarily, that was just about what had been done. There'd been very little done.
Now, the other thing that viewers really need to understand is you've worked with a lot of different kinds of employers, but the agricultural industry is traditionally headed a much higher level of resistance to unionization.
Oh, yes, yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, one good example of it is an industry that's never been organized in agriculture by anyone, and that is the citrus industry. Why? The citrus industry had a history of collecting a dollar a crate as an anti-organizing tool. They had a multi-million dollar fund to prevent organization. Other reasons for it primarily is just the nature of the agricultural process. It's a very fast process once it gets underway, and consequently any interruption of it is highly sensitive, and so there's that natural resistance of the type of person a farmer is to begin with, who's a very independent person, and the fact that there can't be too much disruption in an agricultural process without a possible heavy financial penalty to whoever may own that product.
I mean, when you talk about the kind of person a farmer is, I'm thinking specifically of the Yugoslavs and the Italians and the Delano area, the grape growers, that who really had a special relationship with their land, their workers. They thought no one was going to...
Oh, yes. And Watsonville, for example, the Slavonians in the apple industry, were probably the most difficult to organize of any of the groups. And the Teamsters ran into that as soon as they walked into places like Watsonville, where the Slavonian culture really had control of the apple industry and went beyond the apple industry into all agricultural products.
Now, when you heard, when the word sort of passed that someone was out there trying to organize farm workers, you were sent down to check this guy out. Who sent you down, and what were you trying to find out?
Yes, the Western Conference, when Chavez began to form a union and get involved in some organizing in the Valley primarily that we were aware of, I was asked by the Western Conference, I was director of organizing for the Western Conference, to go down and meet with him and find out what this fellow's all about. So I did. I went to meet Chavez and sat down with him and had a discussion to learn really what his intentions were and find out how serious an effort this was going to be and in what directions.
What were those initial impressions? How did you start
it? Yeah, the way I reported back probably would give you a best idea of my impressions. First of all, I learned that he was a product of Alinsky's school of social revolution, and which is not to say anything bad about him. It just happened to be where he received training, and that his philosophy steeped in that tradition was one of making demands of the establishment but never coming to terms with the establishment, and that in attempting to put together a community action organization, that he found that he didn't have the clout to really be listened to or deliver on what he was trying to accomplish, so that he decided, and someone had suggested to him, that he go into labor as a method of expressing the type of concerns he had for social change. But the philosophy he carried with him was one of the Alinsky philosophy, which is probably very accurate and may be effective in a political situation, but has some special problems connected in an industrial situation which he was moving into.
So apart from telling the people where he was coming from, did you report back, well, this guy's a serious organizer, or he's a community activist, or what?
I reported back that I thought he was serious, and that I thought that he would find the type of power that he was seeking more as a labor union than in his community service organization beginnings, and that I thought that that would cause him to adhere to that.
Now, after that first meeting, which probably happened somewhere around 65, the Teamsters made a decision to get back into the fields in a big way, getting involved with Wilf DiGiorgio and Pirelli Minetti. Tell me how that decision was made.
The decision was made really to test, I guess, Chavez's resolve and probably to learn more about his true intentions on down the line. we had a limited interest in grapes, since we did have some wineries, but we didn't have the same compelling interest had he moved from grapes to some other type of products. But we thought we'd better get in there and test and find out what this was all about. And so I was sent as head of the organizing drive to contest him in the DiGiorgio situation. Pirelli Minetti was an outgrowth of that. It just happened to be there. And so consequently, we became involved in a contest with him.
But I think the way the elections in DiGiorgio went was you won in the sheds and he won in the fields.
Yeah.
And there was something else in Pirelli Minetti. But then for a period, from the outside at least, the Teamsters didn't have too much interest in agriculture for a couple of years. Was that true? Or were you still working on agriculture?
Yeah. Probably we were working on agriculture because I was using a lot of my time negotiating for like the 5,000 lettuce truck drivers. They should be called produce drivers. We still call them lettuce truck drivers, produce drivers from field to shed, field to plant. And so a lot of times I was going into those negotiations at the same time. Remember, this movement is taking place from shed to field, so we are asking in those...
Okay, we got to stop. This is one of these 10-minute film changes, and then we'll pick up.
Okay, that was the end of camera roll 113, 113, going to camera roll 114, and that was take one. We're going to take two.
Take two, marker.
Okay, we're moving up to 1970. In 1970, things are changing. The Chavez group has run this grape boycott, and they're getting closer to actually forcing the Delano growers to sign a contract. And at the same time, the Teamsters Union decided to make a major move into Salinas.
Yes.
Talk about that situation.
Yes. Well, what was happening is I mentioned this movement of product into the field. At this time, we have many local unions, for example, Santa Maria, Santa Barbara, Watsonville, and Salinas, that are primarily those representing these lettuce truck drivers, which are produce drivers, and also representing the sheds, the vacuum cooling stations that are scattered throughout. They're extending or attempting to extend through bargaining and organizing their areas, their contract coverage to those field operations. Viner stations, for example, where peas are separated from the vines, as well as the crews that are responsible for loading these trucks that go into the field, but that are part of the field operation. So they're interested in extending that. Also, they are trying where there are tomato machines and things of that sort to include them in these driver agreements as a supplement to the driver agreements. All of this is happening. So in Salinas, we had all of the agreements. When I say Salinas, that just happened to be where we were bargaining and where the majority of them were in 1970. But we were bargaining for the entire area down into Arizona, Brawley, and throughout all of California, and then down into Arizona for these lettuce truck drivers. And during that time, we had asked for a lot of these extensions that I'm discussing as to become a part of this driver agreement as supplement to these agreements. And after a strike which occurred during that time in the 70s, we struck the lettuce operations. And after some time, I think it went on, I forget now, whether 3, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it did, we were successful not only in settling the basic agreement, but also extending the agreement to those other operations in the field. And there was an opportunity at that time to include the farm workers on a separate contract. And we made the demand, and we continued then. We thought, well, let's organize it now rather than later. And so I, from the conference and all of the local unions that were involved, that I was spokesman for at that point, decided to include all of the agricultural operations in the multiple areas. So we're talking about Salinas, we're talking down into Santa Maria, Santa Barbara, Brawley. Let's include those farm workers under this agreement. And we did. So we did two things at the same time. We started organizing in the field to get representation from the farm workers and also bargaining for them simultaneously. We were doing two things at one time, which is not uncommon in labor.
Well, but let me jump in.
Yeah.
Because when you announced the signing of the lettuce contract,
the 170, some odd.
Certainly the charge by the opposition was that the growers had invited you in and that these were that you didn't actually represent the workers, that these were called sweetheart contracts.
Yeah. Well, we had the cards to prove otherwise. And so we did have cards at the time we signed the agreement. Anyone who's ever worked in farm labor knows that you can have cards today representing the majority, and tomorrow the crew has moved. It's down the road 100 miles. That's why the labor relations code that covers in California, farm labor is designed as it is. It realizes very quick operation. But we did have cards, but you can keep signing all day long. And do you represent a majority? On that day, you may. Tomorrow, you may not. For example, I had...
Can we stop this? Yeah, sure. Going to look like you're just sitting comfortably in your house.
This is take three,
Parker. Well, let me ask you this to continue with what happened in 70. If you had the cards, wouldn't it have made sense to settle it the way DeGeorgia was settled with an election? Did that was that an option at that point, running elections?
There was no law at that time covering how you may proceed. We did it by demand. That's from the beginning of labor, as anyone can tell you, you don't file for an election. You represent the people and you make a demand on the employer. The employer may subsequently ask for an election if he chooses, but I've signed many employers in many industries never going to an election, but simply saying, I've got the cards, I represent the people, I'm making a demand for recognition. That triggers the whole process, is making that demand. If the employer won't agree to your demand, then there are other ways of handling it. Card checks, elections, a variety of other things that you can do.
So tell me a little bit about what unfolded in Salinas after the contracts were signed.
Well, Chavez contested it at that point. Number one, I didn't even know he was there when we first started. I knew he was there shortly after we began negotiations. But we didn't even know he had representation in the field. We thought he was involved with grapes, and we found out. And we had suspected that eventually he'd move from grapes into something else, but we found out he was there or had people there. And so a dispute ensued between the farm workers and ourselves, the Teamsters.
Now, at times it got beyond words. There was violence. There was a situation that was widely reported where members of a Teamsters local in Modesto had come in and engaged in violent activities. Is that the sort of way that you can actually organize workers, or was that an aberration, or what?
That was an aberration because that local that came over and allegedly got involved in some of these things. I later, as representative of the international, took him into trusteeship, and all of those people were terminated that were involved. And the local went under new leadership, had a new election, went under new leadership. But that was an aberration. They thought that this fellow should be stopped, and they got carried away with themselves. But that was one local's one leader, I should say, rather than one local, because the members knew very little, if anything, about it. Position. In fact, I testified against that leader in a federal court, and he was sent to jail.
So, in 70, the lettuce industry becomes organized, and at the same time that all this was happening, the farm workers had just signed a bunch of Galena growers. Did the Teamsters, did you and the people who were plotting Teamster strategy think that you should move into the Grape Center? What was it that made you move towards that decision in 1973?
Well, in 1973, we felt that you couldn't be a little bit in farm labor. You're either in it or you take the consequences of what may happen. And so the decision was made to go into it full tilt. And that decision was made not only on the Western Conference level, but the international level, that we should go into it seriously, that the farm labor should be organized, and that we were in a best position to organize it from the standpoint of our economic strength and our know-how vis-a-vis collective bargaining agreements and the administration of those agreements.
And in fact, when you moved into the Grapes in 73, the same charges were made by Chavez and the same sort of confrontation came around.
Yeah.
What happened in 73?
Well, we had a series of contests with him. I don't know that anything particularly happened. We signed a lot of growers. He signed some. We took some away from him that he had signed, whose contracts had expired. We continued on with our negotiations in the rest of the agricultural industry, because most of these areas aren't just grapes. There's grapes, there's fruit trees in the same areas, there's produce in the same areas. So consequently, we continued. We were intertwined in all of the areas. So consequently, other than citrus, as I mentioned to you, we were involved in every type of process.
Well, the public perception, if you read the papers in the summer of 73, was that there was a war going on out there in the fields.
Yeah. And I guess you could characterize it as that. And we had a sharp difference of opinion with him as to what this was all about. And as to what he was doing and how he was doing it. And we felt we could do a much better job of it and also protect our other interests, which was this 100,000 people that we represented in the food processing industry. So consequently, we did.
Do you think the growers were happy dealing with you instead of him?
I think they were happier. And probably it's a
We're never going to use my question, so you need to say, I think the growers were happier dealing with the Teamsters than with the farmers, mm-hmm. because my words won't be there. So
I see. Yeah. Okay.
On this one, the first segment, we're changing roles.
Oh, okay. We're changing roles.
Changing
time. To the 10-minute point.
Okay, that's the end of camera roll 114 and take 3, and the end of the sound roll also.